You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
The Millennial Kingdom. How many people have ever heard a teaching that was only on the Millennial Kingdom? Terrible. Two out of however many hundred. All right, tonight we're going to fix that. You will now be able to say, I heard a whole teaching on the Millennial Kingdom. Let's start at the beginning. God originally worked through the nation of Israel, you know, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the kings, David, Saul, 42 kings in the northern and southern parts of Israel, Israel and Judah, and God worked through the Jewish people. Then in AD 33, Jesus came, and he started what's called the church, the body of Christ, the family of God. This incorporated not just Jews, mostly, and then you bring in a few Gentiles, non-Jews. They're allowed to enter in, like in Israel. This is bringing in everyone equally. Jew or Greek, slave or free, male or female, we're all one in Christ Jesus. So Jesus starts this new movement called the church. Not a building, people. What we've been studying from Revelation 6 all the way to Revelation 18, really, you could say, is a period of history that is 7 years long that's referred to as the Great and Terrible Tribulation. This is the very end of this failed experiment of human leadership and autonomy where God takes his hands off and lets humans do whatever they want. We studied the Antichrist, we studied one world government, we studied everything that humans would do if they were left to their own devices. With me? Okay. Now, people think, well, after that period's over, you go right into the new heavens and new earth. You do get there, eventually. Kind of like if you were flying to Paris, you'd say, I'm going to Paris by way of Atlanta. First, I got a layover in Atlanta, but then I get to Paris. The new heavens and new earth is where God brings heaven down here to planet Earth. We're going to study this in subsequent weeks, where God is going to restore and rejuvenate this planet. But before he does that, there is this interlude of 1,000 years referred to as the millennium. The millennium, the millennial kingdom of Christ. Dwight Pentecost, who wrote his dissertation back 100 years ago, whatever it was, on the subject of the end of history, he said this, quote, a larger body of prophetic scripture is devoted to the subject of the millennium, our topic for tonight, than any other one subject. When you look at predictive prophecy in the Bible, what's the one subject that has the most prophecy? The millennium. He writes, this millennial age in which the purposes of God are fully realized on the earth demands considerable attention. So why is it that we don't have this taught in most churches? People don't even know what the millennium is. They're like, I know there's something between the church age and the new heavens and new earth, and it's 1,000 years. What is it? It demands our attention, if at least insofar as the fact that we have so much scripture that is attending to this subject. It's this middle part. It's not the church age in a fallen world. It's not perfection, the new heavens and new earth. It's Jesus ruling and reigning on planet earth, and we're going to be there in glorified, resurrected bodies, and yet there's still going to be death, and yet there's still going to be sin. These are the passages I could come up with that I know with my own stamp of approval, I know those are about the millennium. You can see Isaiah is really imbalanced. That's because I was studying the book of Isaiah in my own time for the last 5 months. So I know that book really well. Maybe if I knew Jeremiah a little bit better, we'd have more in there. But whatever the case, this is all throughout the Bible. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Joel, Amos, the Psalms. It's all throughout the Psalms. Hosea, Zephaniah, Zechariah, Daniel, Micah, Malachi, Matthew, Luke, Acts, Romans, Galatians, Hebrew. I mean, it's all throughout the Bible, this huge corpus of literature on the millennium. Well, let's read about it. We're in Revelation chapter 20, verse 1. I saw an angel coming down out of heaven to where? To earth. The setting is on here, planet Earth, at the end of the tribulation. The world system has fallen, and this angel comes down out of heaven down here. He had the key to the abyss, and holding in his hand, he had a great chain. The abyss, what is that? The abusos in Greek. Remember in that scene in Luke 8, where there was that guy who was possessed by many demons, and they said, "We are legion." They made a whole movie out of it, Hollywood. "We are legion, we are many." And Jesus shows up and they trembled and they said, "Please, please, whatever you do, don't send us to the abusos, the abyss." Same word, the abyss. "Please don't send us there. This is some sort of a maximum security prison for demons." Like, you know how there's like light penitentiaries and then there's maximum security, like the real hardest core of the hardest core, go to those. Apparently, the same thing is true with demons. They're like, "Don't put us into the general population with those guys in that prison. Don't send us to the abyss." So Jesus sends them in with the swine. Maybe you've read the story, maybe you haven't. I don't care. The point is, these guys are like, "Don't send us there, whatever you do." And he's holding a great chain. We know in Jude 6, God kept fallen angels in darkness bound with everlasting chains. I don't know why chains would help restrain spiritual beings. I don't know if this is symbolic. I will say I know it's symbolic of something. It is symbolic of the fact that these demons that are held in this abyss are being held by God. And we've already seen them. We remember in Revelation chapter 9, we saw these demons that came up out of the abyss. And man, that was a scary chapter. These are some bad, bad, bad dudes. So the abyss. All right. So where is he going with this? So the angel comes down, seizes the dragon. Who's that? The ancient serpent, Genesis 3. Who's that? The devil. Who's that? Satan. It's like, how many different ways could he put it? Satan himself, bound him for 1,000 years, throws him into this prison, the abyss. He locked it. He sealed it over him to keep him from deceiving the nations anymore until the 1,000 years were ended. After that, he must be set free for a short time. So we got the millennium. That's a long time. Here we got a short time. He's going to be set free for a little bit. Now, what's the story so far? Angel comes from heaven, has these chains, grabs Satan. There's no contest here. Once God says it's over, it's over. Remember, we already dealt with the false prophet and the beast. They're out of the picture. Now Satan's turn. He gets thrown into this prison for how long? 1,000 years. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that there are many theologians who say that this 1,000 years is really symbolic for the age in which we currently live, what's called the church age. Remember the graph? Israel, church age, millennium, new heavens, new earth. We're currently in the church age. And they would argue that right now we're in the millennium. You say, how do you figure? Well, okay, you really think it's 1,000 years in the future? You really think that? You really think like after Jesus comes back, there's going to be another 1,000 years, and then we're going to have the new heavens and new earth? And the number 1,000, isn't that kind of a nice round number? It's not 987 years. It's not 1,012 years. It's 10 times 10 times 10, 10 cubed, 10 to the power of 3. And you know, the Trinity has the 3 in it, and the 10 is a perfect number, and 10 cubed, that's got to be some. That's, you really think it's an actual period of time? Or is this a recap of what we read in Revelation chapter 12, where Satan is used with the same language, the deceiver, the devil, the serpent of old, and this is just a recap of what happened in the church age? Oh, yeah. So you think there's an actual millennium? Oh, well, let me enlighten you. There's not. Okay. We're in the millennium right now. So these folks, which, may I add, are in the vast majority in theology today. they are called amillennial, like atheist, atheist, no God. Amillennialism is no millennium. Really, that's a misnomer. They're like, we're in the millennium. There is a millennium. We're in it right now. It's just symbolic. Post-millennials, kind of the same thing. They're like, yeah, it kind of leads up to Jesus's return. Well, how do we adjudicate all these views? Amillennialists, post-millennialists, in my view, is called premillennial. Where do I get that? Pre meaning before the millennium. Jesus showed up in Revelation 19, if I remember that correctly, right? He showed up before, pre chapter 20, the millennium. So I'm premillennial. With me? Okay. How do we discern between all these different views? I mean, there are some good, smart people holding these different perspectives. What could be a resource to help you figure out these different views? If only there was like a book that would help you to decide where you land. There is one book, okay? Pages 135 to 176, I basically go through what are their views. I got them in print. I mean, these are the best and the brightest. Kim Riddlebarger, Sam Storms, G.K. Beale, the best guys on the other side. What's their view? What's the counter view? What's their rebuttal? What's the counter rebuttal? It's 40 pages. It'll change your life. All right. Anyways, I'm going to make it real simple tonight. We can't go into all that. Time is limited. The major fly in the ointment of the idea that we are currently living in the millennium right now, that the millennium is the church age, is the notion that you would need to believe that Satan is currently bound. That's what we just read. That thousand-year period is when Satan is thrown into the abyssos, the abyss. So he's down there in the abyss, and so he's bound. So we would need to believe that if we're in the millennium right now, that Satan is currently bound. Oh, all right. So let's think about this subject of the incarceration of Satan. Is he currently bound? Well, what we read there was that he's sealed. Let's see what Greg Beale says. He says, well, all right, sealed. Let me enlighten you. Sealed, being sealed, quote, could just as well connote the general idea of authority over. It's not that you're literally sealed into like a box or a prison. Come on. It's that God has authority over Satan, which is its primary meaning in Daniel 6:17 and Matthew 27:66. Huh. Thought, wow, maybe sealed could just mean like you have authority over, not that you're like sealed away from planet Earth. You know what I mean? Then I looked up those passages. You know what Daniel 6 is? Daniel in the lion's den. The king sealed Daniel in there. Okay, yeah, he had authority over Daniel in there. And guess what? Daniel couldn't get out of there. He was in a freaking cavern with lions. It wasn't just like, you got authority over me. There's a big rock that's sealing you in there. You're stuck. Guess what the other quote is from Greg Beale? Matthew 27. You know what that is, don't you? The tomb of Christ. They sealed him in there. There was a big, heavy rock that they rolled over the tomb. And these are the two examples that show authority over instead of being sequestered into a prison. They're both prisons. They're both prisons. The two examples he gives are prisons. Now, I know Daniel gets out, and I know Jesus got out. That's not the point. The point is he's saying that word seal. Oh, I don't know. We shouldn't be too dogmatic on what it means. I'll tell you what it means. Sphragizo is the same word that is used to describe how believers in Jesus are sealed when they come to know Christ. It is the royal seal of God himself that he says, you are with me no matter what you do, no matter what you've done, no matter what you're doing. That's the message of Christ. That is the seal. We are sealed in him. Yeah, I don't buy it. See, all right, now, let's say I'm wrong. Let's say Greg Beale is right. Wait a minute. That's only one of the words. Sealed, let's say it's authority over. What do you do with locked, bound, and in the abyss? So locked, that sounds like you're locked away. Bound, same thing. You're put away. You're not around planet Earth. You're not around believers, the nations. And you're put into the abyss. This is the same word used in Luke 8. It's the same word used for a place where demons go where they're not allowed out of it. All right, let me ask you this question. If John really was trying to communicate that Satan was totally incarcerated and not allowed out of this prison, what more would he need to write? Like if he added sealed, locked, bound, and trapped, would that be the point that you're like, oh, we get it, trapped, they couldn't get out? You know, if he added one more extra word, another verb in there, that would be the point at which you say, oh, yeah, he's definitely incarcerated. I think he's saying it four different ways. It says from deceiving the nations, they would say, all right, so he's bound, but only from deceiving the nations. So it's not that he's totally bound, guys from this perspective would say. It's that he's bound from stopping the gospel from reaching the nations. And after all, Jesus' message has reached the nations, so fulfilled prophecy right there. God won. Okay, wait a minute. So it's just Satan was impotent from stopping the gospel from deceiving the nations. And this is all a recap of which chapter? Chapter 12, was it? Revelation 12:9 says Satan deceives the whole world. That's the same exact language that's being used. Or Revelation 18:23, the nations, the same term, the ethnoi, were deceived, same language, deceived. So, wait a minute. In the book itself, it uses the same language, deceived, nations, whole world. Those are at loggerheads with each other. I hope you can see that. I hope you can see these cannot both be true. It can't be A and not A in the same way, in the same respect, in the same time. This has got to be different. The difference would be Satan right now is deceiving the world. In the millennium, he won't be. But that's not all. That's not all. Check this out. Right now, according to the New Testament, Satan enters the hearts of believers. He's scheming against believers. He hinders believers. He devours believers. He blinds the minds of the unbelieving. And the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. But don't worry. He's bound. The fact that we could have so much literature, and here's another thing I'd like to ask. If we're just learning about Satan in the first century and how he can impede and devour and scheme and everything, only to find out he's immediately bound, what is the purpose in that? I've tried. I've tried reading the other side on this. I don't get it. Verse 4, I saw thrones on which were seated those who had been given authority to judge. I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of their testimony about Jesus and because of the word of God. They had not worshiped the beast or its image and had not received its mark on their foreheads or on their hands. They came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. The rest of the dead didn't come to life until the 1,000 years were ended. This is the first resurrection. So these people came to life. Which people? Those who were martyred. How were they martyred? Beheaded. They were brought, so Jesus returns at the beginning of the millennium, brings these guys who were beheaded, martyred, back to life. The rest of the dead, they will not be brought back to life until the end of the millennium. And then he even says, this is the protos anastasis, the first protos anastasis resurrection. So there's at least, at the very least, more than one resurrection. Here when it says, when they came to life to reign, we get that right out of Revelation 5, that they will reign where? In heaven? No. Revelation 5:10, they will reign on the earth. Remember when it said in verse 4, there will be thrones, plural, not just Jesus' throne. Thrones, on where? On earth. Who are those thrones for? For you. For us. It says that we're going to reign with Christ on earth. It's during the millennial kingdom. That's when this happens. This is in the Old Testament, Daniel 7:18. It's in the New Testament, the apostles, Matthew 19:28. You will reign with me on 12 thrones. And it's all throughout. 1 Corinthians 6, I love that. Don't you know that you will judge angels, Paul writes? No, I didn't know that, Paul. I didn't know I was going to be a judger of angels. He's like, yeah, you are going to rule and reign even over angels. Blessed and holy are those who share in this first resurrection. Yeah, I guess if you give your life for Jesus, that is that's special. Blessed and holy are those who share in this first resurrection. The second death has no power over them. That's going to hell, being separated from God forever. We're going to talk about that next week. Second death has no power over them, but they will be priests of God and of Christ and will reign with him for 1,000 years. Let me take one more shot. I can't resist. I can't. One more shot at these people who say that we're currently in the millennium. Did you read what I just read? If we're in the millennium right now, to what does the resurrection refer? Okay, we're in the millennium. These people were beheaded, right? Their heads fall off the ground, and then they're resurrected, and they reign with Christ for 1,000. What could that possibly refer to right now? You know what millennials and post-millennials would say? Receiving Christ. Okay. Okay, a few problems. For one, anastasis, resurrection. Ana means again. Stasis means to stand. Literally, resurrection, to stand back up, okay? That word, anastasis, is used 41 times in the New Testament, always referring to a bodily, physical, corporeal resurrection. Your body is coming back. Never refers to receiving Jesus into your heart. That's how the whole process of coming to Christ begins. Spiritual birth, when you receive Christ into your heart. Are we to believe that these beheaded Christians who were martyred for Jesus were martyred for Jesus after they, or rather before they had their resurrection, receiving Christ? Isn't it that we receive Christ and then we live a life for God? Under this view, you would need to believe that you have Christian martyrs being beheaded for their faith, and then at the end, out of order, coming to Christ at the end. I can't do it, guys. I can't do it. You could twist my arm behind my back. I could say it. I can't do it. I can't actually believe it. Because it's stuff like this. It's just completely out of order. The words mean nothing, and I think it's just a total train wreck. Now, if you listen to an amillennial, they would say, my view is a train wreck, and they would say, I'm wrong, and they're right. Well, you're listening to me. They're wrong, and I'm right. And you can figure that out for yourself. You can learn for yourself and come up with your own view. Well, verse 7. When the 1,000 years are over, Satan will be released from this prison. He will go out to deceive the nations in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, and to gather them for battle. In number, they're like the sand of the sea. Now, right there, here's a problem for my view. Gog and Magog, they were brought up in Ezekiel 38 and 39, but that doesn't fit with what we just read here. I argued a couple weeks ago, Gog and Magog, that old battle, was during the tribulation. This is saying it's at the end of the millennium. What gives? Okay. When Ezekiel refers to Gog, he says that Gog comes from the remote parts of the north. Where do Gog and Magog come in Revelation 20? The four corners of the earth. So he's communicating a difference. There is a Gog and Magog, two nations, back during the tribulation, that come from the north to attack Israel. This Gog and Magog, they're coming from all different directions to come into Israel. In my estimation, this nation, or rather these nations, exist through the millennium and retain their identity. And then at the end of the millennium, they come back and they raise another battle against Christ. Is that too hard to believe? Just think about Germany. Watch the Germans, man. Watch them. They're always starting wars, constantly. Read European history. If you're German, deal with it. If you, all right? Germany is always starting wars, and they keep their ethnic, they keep their geography and their real estate, and they've been doing this for hundreds of years. in a fallen world where we got nations, you know, just piling on top of each other in Europe, and Germany always survives. World War I, they started the war to end all wars. Remember the war to end all wars, yeah. And then 20 years later, bang, they're back. They had total inflation. It was terrible. And then the Nazis showed up. Nazis. We had Nazis all of a sudden. Watch Germany, man. Keep an eye on them. Anyways, my point is this. Even in our world right now, you have nations that rise up, fight, kill, and then go dormant. It's not just the Germans. It's all of us, right? We're all doing it. Is it hard to believe that in a perfect period of history, during the millennium, that Gog and Magog don't keep a national identity? I don't have a hard time believing that at all. Verse 9, they marched across the breadth of the earth and surrounded the camp of God's people, the city he loves, Jerusalem. We're still focused on Israel, but fire came down from heaven and devoured them all. Very underwhelming battle. This battle is over. There's no record even mentioned of it. It's like they come to fight like a bunch of fruit flies attacking a man, and Jesus is just like, okay, you're done. Boom. And it's over. Verse 10, the devil who deceived them was thrown into the burning lake of sulfur where the beast and the false prophet were. They will be tormented day and night forever and ever. One question that comes up is, why does God imprison Satan for 1,000 years only to let him out again at the very end? Well, I guess I would begin by saying nothing happens. They gather all these people up to go fight Jesus again. They want to kill Jesus again. They don't. So no one's harmed except for people that hate Christ, that want to kill Christ again. Question to consider is, I guess this is answering a question with a question. Why did God let Satan loose in the first place? Like, if he knew Satan was bad, why would he let him exist? This is a monument to creaturely freedom. God actually wants a universe with free creatures. See, we don't understand that. We wouldn't want that. If we were God, we wouldn't want actual free creatures. We would want puppets. We would want robots, things that would, you know, make us happy or whatever. God actually wants persons. He wants daughters. He wants sons. He wants relationship. That's the way that he is. So if you can tell me why he let him out the second time, I think you got to answer the question, why did he do it the first time? Because he's letting people have what they want. In this case, free choice. In my view, this is very underdeveloped in the Bible, but I'm speculating here. This appalling attack on Jesus, where they gather the nations another time to kill Jesus again, to crucify him again, after he's lived for 1,000 years on earth, perfect peace, perfect harmony, and they're like, we want to string him up and crucify him again. That appalling act, that horrific thought, that is going to stand as a monument forever. Where right now, what we can say is, you know, in classical theology, the problem is the world, the flesh, and the devil. So when we do things that are sin, it's because of the world in which we live, or it's because of Satan tempts us, or it's because of me, my own flesh. Well, two out of the three are going to be out of the way. What's remaining? Just us. These people will have a sin nature, and they won't be able to blame anything else. And for all eternity, we'll never be able to say, well, you know, the devil made me do it, or it was my society, it was my culture, none of that. You're going to only be able to blame yourself. And the human heart will be revealed for what it is. All right, the millennial kingdom. Let's wrap up with some kind of a summary of what we're going to see in the millennium. For one, there's going to be a perfect government led by Jesus. I can't wait for this. I watch the news more than I should. And the more I watch it, the more nauseated I am. I'm not just talking about American politics. I'm a little bit more broad than that. You know, you look across the world and you're just like, this is, when Jesus comes back and he reigns and rules, that is going to be, oh man, he's got my vote. Not like he's asking for it, but he's got it for sure. We read in Isaiah 9, to us a child is born, a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Yeah, we read that around Christmas. It's a good passage. You got a human birth baby, but he's going to be called Mighty God. And this comes out of the Old Testament, 700 years before Jesus. But then we read, of the greatness of that government, his government, and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom. This messianic ruler is not just going to be mighty God, not just going to be human born, mighty God. He's also going to rule over David's throne. He's going to be Jewish, and he's going to be in Israel. So he's going to have that as kind of his epicenter. Zechariah 14, in context, describes how people, after Jesus returns, sets his feet on the Mount of Olives, he comes back, and then the nations are still there. And apparently, there's some of them are still rebelling. Like we read here, if any of the peoples, the nations of the earth, don't go up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord Almighty, they will have no reign. Think about that. Jesus is ruling, and some nations are like, we don't want to follow you. And he's like, all right, no reign. How's that work out for you? You like that? And you want to worship me now? eventually, they're going to get the point. Following God is where it's at. Why would you reject a benevolent ruler, a benevolent king, a loving king? And apparently, there's going to be a point where there is this middle ground. You see what I'm saying? Like, it's not now. It's not the church age. It's not like Jesus is ruling, cutting off the rain from nations. It isn't in heaven. Heaven, there's going to be no sin, no rebellion. It's these passages right in the middle where you've got a perfect ruler. Oh, I can't wait to see this. There's going to be ecological harmony. Isaiah 11, verse 6. In that day, the wolf and the lamb will live together. The calf will be safe with the lion. And a little child will lead them all. A little child is going to lead the lion and the calf and the lamb. And the little child is going to do all this. Yeah. Verse 7, the cow will graze near the bear. That doesn't happen now. The cub and the calf will lie down together. The lion will eat hay like a cow. Lions don't do that. The baby will play safely near the hole of a cobra. Yes, a little child will put its hand into a nest of deadly snakes without harm. Moms and dads in the millennium, they're going to be like, get off your PlayStation, Xbox, and whatever else. Go play with the snakes. Like, dude, go have fun. Go play out. And you'll be able to do it. It'll be good advice. Like, you can just wave your hand around the cobra hole and stuff. Do whatever you want. No problem. Ecological harmony. So you're going to be living here. And there's going to be no harm, us in the animal kingdom. It's going to be beautiful. No political harm. And we're going to have extremely good health and long life. Isaiah 35, God is coming to save you. When he comes, he will open the eyes of the blind. He will open the eyes of the blind. During the millennium, he's going to go around healing people. Now, I know this is cited in Matthew 11. To refer to Jesus, that was partially fulfilled. Read Isaiah 35. It wasn't all fulfilled. He's going to go around healing people, people with disabilities, people that need it. Brought this video along here, technology that helps the blind see what you think.
I didn't want to start crying then. That's why we're paying attention to TV, but she's just beautiful to me, and it's actually the first time that I actually fully saw her face. I'd love to see my mother's face right now.
Is there a picture of her we could pull up?
Yeah. Oh my God. This is just unbelievable.
Looking into a visor that helps you see, He's speechless. He's in tears. What happens when the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, goes over and touches each individual person, healing them? Oh, he will open the ears of the deaf, so the blind will see, the deaf will hear. Came across another video. Little baby gets an implant that helps her to hear, and it's her little or her big sister speaking to her for the first time, and she's able to hear it. See what you think.
Baby sister.
It's crazy.
Baby sister.
Isn't that beautiful? Open the eyes of the blind, open the ears of the deaf. The lame will leap like a deer. People that can't walk, Jesus is going to go and heal each and every one of them. People that can't speak, it's not just that they'll speak. What does it say? They'll sing. They're going to be singers. They're going to be on The Voice. People that couldn't even talk. Extremely good health. Look at this, Isaiah 65. No longer will adults die before they have lived a full life. No longer will people be considered old at the age of 100. 100's old. 100 is old. Not then. Only the cursed will die that young. You know when they say like, gone too soon. But it's like, he's 100. You know what I mean? At this point, they'll be like, he died at 100. Like, I can't believe he died at 100 years old. That was way too soon. It says in verse 63, my people will live as long as trees. That's long. Way longer than today. So you see what I'm saying? It's not the church age. We don't live that long, right? It's not heaven. We live for eternity in heaven. It's this, what is it? It's like the millennial kingdom, somewhere in between. It's not one or the other. If you try and force it into the church age, it doesn't work. Force it into heaven, definitely doesn't work. And people will just keep on living. It's going to be amazing. Isaiah 65, 23 says a lot of babies are going to be born. That would explain how we have all these people who rebel when they get into the end of the millennium. People are going to be limping into the millennial kingdom. And when they get in there, they're going to be alive. They're going to be believers in Jesus, have kids. They have kids, more kids. And then eventually 1,000 years go by, some of them are going to rebel. They're going to have a sin nature. The rest of us are going to return with Christ. Hear me now. We're going to be there in the millennium with resurrected bodies. No sin natures. Read 1 Corinthians 15 about that. So we're going to be there alongside mortal people. I know that's far out. It's happened before. Moses and Elijah show up at the Mount of Transfiguration. Jesus showed up post-resurrection. And I could go on and on. Point is, we're going to be there, but these mortals are going to be there, and they're going to be very fertile. They're going to be having lots of babies, and they're eventually going to repopulate the earth, and we're going to be ruling and reigning, making sure everything's going well. Finally, Satan will be imprisoned. How often are you coming under the threats, accusation, and overall oppression of Satan? I have no idea, but I will say this. I know it's a lot where you just get so much weight, that oppressive guilt, accusation, wake up first thing in the morning. Oh, God, what a terrible life, terrible day, terrible friends, terrible God. And all that is just going to be, whew. Imagine you're just constantly hearing a background noise, just a constant noise, and then all of a sudden it's gone. That inner thought life of just wicked, evil, accusatory thoughts is silenced. Oh man, this is going to be something else. And here's the greatest part. You ready? Here's the greatest part about the millennium. The best is yet to come. This was kind of a rough week for me. I was up till 4 a.m. last night, kid with asthma, my son. And I had a lot of time to think as I'm just sitting there laying on the couch, making sure he's alive, you know. I was thinking about my life. My kids are getting older, starting a young junior high group with one of them. just kind of felt like, man, things are just flying right by. Like my kids, they like me now. Are they going to like me forever? And I don't know if you can identify with this at all. I don't know, but felt like God was speaking to me on this. Okay, your view is you think that your relationships are just going to get worse. My view is that the best is yet to come. You think these fallen relationships with your kids, like that's the best relationship in your life. You love your kids and your spouse, your wife. That's as good as it gets for you. James, I got way, way better where that came from. And I guess that's something we can all look forward to. Where we're headed, it's going to be unspeakable. The things that we're going to see are just going to be unbelievable. And we can all look forward to that.